I remember the stall door shaking when someone closed the bathroom door too hard, and I told myself it wasn't fear, it was just the air moving. My phone buzzed again in my hand. I didn't look at it right away. I already knew who it was from. He always wrote when he knew I was away from my desk. The meeting had started 3 minutes ago. I could tell by the way the office went quiet, like a held breath. I sat there counting the grout lines on the floor, my heels turned inward so no one would see them under the door. I practiced my face in my head. Neutral, open, calm. My phone buzzed again. This time I looked, it was an email, not a message. That made it worse. Emails were permanent, emails were proof. I scrolled without reading and saw the subject line twice, like my eyes didn't trust it. Then I saw a draft below it, an unsent email. To HR, my words, my name. I didn't remember writing it. I deleted it anyway. I flushed the toilet to explain the time. I stood up too fast. In the mirror, my face looked fine. That scared me more than anything. I unlocked the stall and reached for the door, already late, already quiet, already deciding not to say why. I walked back to my desk like nothing had happened. That was the skill I had learned fastest. How to move without leaving evidence. How to sit down and let my shoulders drop at the right speed. How to open my laptop and nod at the right moments so no one would ask where I had been. The meeting ended before I got there. Chairs scraped, voices loosened, someone laughed too loud. I kept my eyes on my screen and pretended I had been deep in something important. He passed my desk without stopping. That was new. Usually he paused. Usually there was a comment, a correction, a reminder disguised as help. This time he kept walking, already talking to someone else. I felt the shift immediately, like a draft through a cracked window. I told myself it was good. Less attention meant less risk. Still, my hands shook when I logged in. I had been at the company for 4 years. Long enough to know the rhythms. Long enough to know who spoke first in meetings and who took notes even when it wasn't their job. Long enough to know that being visible was dangerous if you didn't control the frame. I had built that control carefully. I didn't raise my voice. I didn't interrupt. I waited to be asked. When I wasn't, I followed up later, quietly, with documentation. People told me I was dependable, that I was easy to work with, that I made things smoother. He liked that at first. He said I was steady. He said I was low drama. He said clients trusted me because I didn't push. When he said those things, he smiled like he was giving me something. I learned how to receive it. The first time he corrected me in private, I thought I had misheard. He closed the door and stood too close to my chair. He pointed at my screen and said my wording sounded defensive. He asked if English was my first language. He laughed after, like it was a joke I had missed. I laughed too. After that, it became normal. Comments slipped in between tasks. Feedback that didn't make it into emails. Suggestions that couldn't be traced back to him. I adjusted. I changed phrases. I softened edges. I reread messages out loud before sending them, listening for anything that could be mistaken for attitude. I started copying him on emails, even when it wasn't necessary, just to show alignment. It worked, for a while. Pressure didn't arrive all at once. It layered. Like weight you don't notice until your knees start to ache. I stopped eating lunch at my desk because he commented on it once. I started leaving earlier so he wouldn't ask why I stayed late. I stopped offering ideas unless someone else brought them up first. People noticed my quiet more than my work. One afternoon, a coworker leaned over and whispered that I was so calm all the time. She said she wished she could be like that. I smiled and felt something pull tight behind my ribs. Calm meant invisible. Invisible meant safe. And that was the equation I lived by. At home, my parents asked how work was going. They asked if I felt secure. They asked if I was grateful. I said yes before they finished the question. I told them it was stable. I told them my boss trusted me. I didn't tell them about the way my stomach tightened every time his name appeared on my screen. I didn't tell them about the meetings that happened without me, or the jokes I didn't laugh at fast enough. There was no language for that conversation anyway. Back at the office, the air felt different after the bathroom, sharper. Like I had crossed some line without meaning to. I checked my calendar. Nothing had changed. Meetings stacked the way they always did. Deadlines waiting quietly. I worked carefully. I worked slower than usual so I wouldn't make mistakes. I double-checked numbers I already knew were right. I reread notes from meetings I hadn't spoken in. He didn't speak to me for the rest of the morning. That silence felt heavier than any comment. Around noon, I went to the break room. I poured coffee I didn't want, just so my hands would have something to do. Two people stopped talking when I walked in. They smiled too late. I told myself not to notice. When I got back to my desk, there was a calendar invite waiting. Subject line: check-in. Time: 4:30 p.m. I clicked it once. Then again, I read the details slowly, like they might rearrange themselves if I paid enough attention. Me, him, HR. My throat went dry. Optional meant nothing and everything. Optional meant deniability. Optional meant he could say it was routine. Optional meant I could pretend it was too. I didn't respond right away. I stared at the screen and tried to remember the last time HR had been optional in anything that involved me. I couldn't think of one. I imagined the meeting, the closed door, the tone he would use, concerned, reasonable. I imagined myself nodding, agreeing, apologizing for something I hadn't named yet. I imagined HR listening and taking notes that wouldn't be shared with me. My phone buzzed again. This time, it was a text from my mother asking if I could send money early this month. I said yes without checking my account. Work came first. That was the rule. Work paid for everything else. The afternoon stretched. Each minute felt louder than the last. Every email sounded like it might be about me, even when it wasn't. I tried to focus on tasks that required precision. Numbers steadied me. They didn't change tone halfway through a sentence. They didn't imply things they wouldn't write down. At 3:45, he walked past my desk and stopped. "Busy?" he asked. I said no too quickly, then corrected myself and said I meant yes, but I could make time. He nodded like that was the right answer. He didn't smile. "Good," he said. "We'll talk later." He walked away before I could ask about HR. I sat there staring at my screen, my reflection faint in the glass. I practiced my neutral face again. I relaxed my jaw, I lowered my shoulders, I slowed my breathing. I told myself not to assume anything. I told myself optional didn't mean decided. I told myself this was just a check-in. At 4:29, I stood up. At 4:30, I walked toward his office. The door was already open. HR hadn't arrived yet. I stepped inside anyway. He didn't ask me to sit down right away. That was the first thing I noticed. He stayed standing, one hand on the back of his chair, the other tapping lightly against his desk, like he was waiting for something to start. HR never came. After a few seconds, he closed the door. "It's nothing serious," he said before I had said anything at all. "I just wanted to check in." I nodded. I always nodded first. It made people comfortable. He asked how I was feeling about my workload. He asked if I felt supported. He asked if I thought the team dynamics were working. Each question came wrapped in the same tone: calm, measured, concerned. I answered carefully. I said I was fine. I said things were manageable. I said the team was collaborative. He listened with his head tilted slightly to the side, like he was considering me as a concept, not a person. Then he leaned back and sighed. "I've noticed you've seemed a little withdrawn lately," he said, "not as engaged." I opened my mouth and closed it again. He kept going. "It's not a criticism," he said. "I just want to make sure nothing's getting in the way of your growth." Growth. That word always came right before something was taken away. I told him I was focused. I told him I cared about the work. I told him I was committed. He nodded, satisfied, like I had confirmed something he already believed. "We've decided to make a few adjustments," he said, "just temporarily." My stomach tightened, slow and deep. He talked about restructuring, about efficiency, about making sure everyone was playing to their strengths. He said my attention to detail made me perfect for support roles. Support roles. He said it like it was a compliment. "I think it'll take some pressure off you," he added. "You've been under a lot." I didn't know what pressure he meant. I hadn't said I was under pressure. I hadn't said anything at all. Before I could ask, he turned his screen toward me. A chart. Names shifted around. Lines moved. My name slid down. I was no longer leading the project I had built. The one I had stayed late for. The one I had defended in meetings where my voice barely carried. Someone else's name sat where mine had been. "This doesn't mean you're off the team," he said quickly. "You'll still be involved, just not driving." Driving. I thought of all the times I had already been braking. I nodded again. I said I understood. That's the spirit, he said. Flexibility is important here. When I left his office, my legs felt hollow, like I had forgotten how to use them properly. I went back to my desk and sat down. I opened the project files out of habit, then closed them when I realized I didn't have access anymore. The folder was still there. My name just wasn't attached to it. I stared at the screen until it dimmed. No one said anything. No one asked. The office absorbed the change like it had always been that way. Later that day, an email went out, a clean announcement, neutral language, a new lead assigned to streamline workflow. My name appeared once, buried in a list of contributors. I read it 3 times. A coworker messaged me privately, just a sentence. Saw the update. Hope you're okay. I typed back, all good. I added a smiley face, then deleted it, then sent the message without it. The next week passed like that. Quiet, administrative. My calendar thinned without explanation. Meetings disappeared. Decisions were made elsewhere. When I spoke, people nodded politely and moved on. I adjusted again. I told myself this was temporary. I told myself staying calm would help. I told myself not to draw attention. At night, I replayed the meeting in my head. I looked for moments where I could have said something different. I imagined asking questions I hadn't asked. I imagined stopping the slide before it happened. None of those versions felt real. On Wednesday, HR finally reached out, a short email asking to touch base, no urgency, no specifics. We met in a small room with glass walls. She smiled a lot. She asked open-ended questions. She used my boss's name casually, like a sign of trust. I said the same things I had said before. That work was fine, that I was adjusting, that I appreciated the support. She nodded and typed. Let us know if anything comes up, she said at the end. Our door is always open. I thanked her. When I returned to my desk, I saw that the project folder had been reassigned completely. I no longer appeared anywhere in it. It felt deliberate now, not corrective, not temporary. Erasure. Later that afternoon, he stopped by my desk again. I appreciate how you're handling this, he said quietly. Not everyone would. Handling this meant not resisting. Handling this meant not naming it. I knew I could count on you, he added. Something in me folded inward then, not sharply, slowly, like fabric being put away. I stopped staying late. There was no reason to. I stopped volunteering. There was no space for it. My work became narrower, safer, smaller. At home, my parents told me they were proud of me. They said my job sounded important. They asked when I would be promoted. I said soon. One afternoon near the end of the month, a meeting invite appeared on my calendar. Not optional this time, just a meeting. Short. 15 minutes. When I walked into the room, he was already there. So was someone else from leadership. Not HR. They thanked me. They thanked me for my flexibility, for my professionalism, for being a team player during a transition. Then they told me the project no longer needed my involvement. Not reassignment, not pause, removal. They said it was a strategic decision. They said it wasn't a reflection of my performance. They said they hoped I understood. I listened. I nodded. I took notes even though no one asked me to. When they finished, they looked at me like they were waiting for relief, for agreement. I understand, I said. My voice didn't shake. They smiled. The meeting ended early. I went back to my desk and packed my things into my bag like it was the end of the day, even though it wasn't. I closed files. I logged out. Before I left, I sent a short email to the team, happy to support however needed going forward. I stared at the sentence for a long time before sending it. That was the moment I knew there was no going back. Not to the project, not to the version of myself who thought silence would protect her. I walked out of the office carrying nothing visible. Inside, something had been taken cleanly enough that no one could say it had been stolen. And I had thanked them for it. I kept going to work. That's the part people expect. That endurance means something dramatic happened after. That I left, that I reported, that I changed everything. I didn't. The office stayed the same. The lights, the carpet, the hum of printers that never sounded urgent until you listened too long. What changed was how little of me was required. My days became quieter. Tasks arrived without context. Instructions came through forwarded emails instead of conversations. I stopped being included in meetings where decisions were made. I was still copied afterward, as if that counted. I learned the difference between being informed and being involved. At first, I tried to earn my way back, not openly, quietly. I stayed late again. I offered help. I sent notes that anticipated questions no one asked. Nothing shifted. People still smiled. People still said my name kindly. That made it harder to explain to myself what had happened. He was still my boss. He still spoke to me the same way, polite, measured, almost warm. That warmth felt dangerous now. I avoided being alone with him. I took longer routes through the office. I timed bathroom breaks around meetings. I learned where he was likely to be and planned my movements accordingly. It felt ridiculous. Then it felt necessary. My body responded before my mind did. Tight shoulders, shallow sleep, a constant hum under my skin that never shut off. I woke up tired and went to bed exhausted in a way that sleep didn't touch. On weekends, I couldn't rest. Rest felt like something you had to earn. I hadn't earned it yet. My parents called more often. They asked about my job. They told relatives about it. They said my name with pride. I let them. I didn't tell them that my work no longer felt like mine. I didn't tell them that I spent most days making myself smaller so no one would notice I was still there. I told them I was grateful. Gratitude was easier than truth. One afternoon, a new hire joined the team. She sat two desks away from me. She asked questions freely. She spoke in meetings. She laughed when she disagreed. People listened to her. I watched her carefully, not with envy, with recognition. I wanted to warn her. I didn't know how. There was no single moment to point to. No sentence I could quote. No behavior that wouldn't sound like interpretation if I said it out loud. So I stayed silent. That silence didn't feel protective anymore. It felt like participation. HR never followed up. My boss never mentioned the project again. Leadership moved on. The company praised resilience that quarter. There were emails about culture, about values, about speaking up. I read them at my desk and felt nothing. At night, I started rehearsing conversations that would never happen. What I would say if someone asked directly. What I would say if I finally reported. What I would say if I quit. In every version, my voice sounded steadier than it ever had in real life. In reality, my voice stayed flat, professional, unremarkable. Months passed. I stopped thinking of myself as ambitious. I thought of myself as careful. That felt safer. I began measuring success differently. Not by growth, by survival. Some days I felt relief. The pressure to perform was gone. Expectations were lower. No one asked more of me than I could give. That relief came with shame. I wondered who I was becoming when I accepted this version of my life. I wondered if I had chosen it, or if it had been chosen for me slowly enough that it felt like agreement. One evening, I stayed late without meaning to. The office emptied. The lights dimmed automatically. I sat there staring at my screen, not working, just sitting. I realized I hadn't spoken out loud in hours. That scared me. I packed my bag and left. In the parking garage, my footsteps echoed. I walked slower than usual, dragging the moment out. When I got to my car, I didn't unlock it right away. I stood there with my hand on the handle, breathing in air that smelled like oil and concrete. I thought about the email I had deleted weeks ago, the one to HR. I wondered what it had said. I wondered if it had been enough. I sat in the driver's seat and closed the door. The silence inside the car was different, thicker, private. I stayed there longer than necessary, not crying, not thinking clearly, just sitting with the version of myself I hadn't protected and the one I was still carrying to work every day. Eventually, I started the engine. The office disappeared behind me, but the quiet didn't. It followed me all the way home.